on your commute, on your walk, on your couch. With the WSHU app, you can stream your favorite shows, check playlists, and catch up on podcasts anytime. Plus, you can send us feedback right in the app. Tell us what you love or what you'd like more of. Download the WSHU app free on the App Store or Google Play.
This is WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Does Ryan Fazio want Trump's endorsement for Connecticut governor? Suffolk police roll out a new device to help detect impaired drivers. Plus, is Connecticut business friendly? Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut State Senator and candidate for governor Ryan Fazio is noncommittal on whether he'd like to pick up an endorsement from the country's top Republican. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
Speaking to reporters at the Coast Guard commencement on Wednesday, Fazio said his campaign had been in contact with the White House, but wouldn't say whether or not he'd like an endorsement from Trump.
I'm focused on Connecticut voters, and, you know, I appreciate the support of anyone, any of our leaders in any party, in order to win statewide in Connecticut. But, you know, we're here today for the graduation.
Trump was the commencement speaker at the ceremony on Wednesday. Fazio was the only gubernatorial candidate there. Governor Ned Lamont said he was skipping the event for fear that Trump's speech would be too political. Fazio criticized that decision.
I would think that the leader of the state government would want to be in attendance to celebrate our Coast Guard cadets who are willing to sacrifice their lives for the safety of the rest of us. And, you know, it's an honor for us in Connecticut to host the Coast Guard Academy in the first place.
Kamala Harris won the state of Connecticut by 14 percentage points in the 2024 presidential election. It's unclear how much an endorsement from Trump would benefit a Connecticut Republican. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul is joining moderate Democrats in other states in securing new laws to protect immigrants. The New York Public News Network's Jimmy Vilkind has more.
When Governor Hochul testified last year on Capitol Hill, she kept repeating one phrase.
We cooperate with ICE.
But this year, Hochul is touting a tentative deal to ban formal cooperation agreements and restrict when on-duty ICE agents can wear masks. Governors Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey and Wes Moore in Maryland are embracing similar legislation. It's a sign that the aggressive surge in Minnesota, resulting in two civilian deaths, has changed things. That's according to Muzaffar Chishti, a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute.
Everything that was considered unacceptable and sort of third rail in immigration politics suddenly became acceptable.
Hochul hopes to sign the new immigration laws as part of the state budget. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
The Connecticut Attorney General has joined a federal lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Education over new limits to student loan borrowing. WSHU's Janice Roman has more.
The department changed rules to limit borrowing amounts around certain degrees. It also changed definitions of what are considered, quote, professional degrees. Under the new designation, degrees for careers like nurses, social workers, and physical and occupational therapists would have borrowing limits. Degrees like medicine and law could be considered professional degrees, but they have a $50,000 annual cap and a $200,000 lifetime cap on loans. Students pursuing a master's degree would have an annual cap of just over $20,000 and a $100,000 lifetime cap on borrowing. Some students will see changes in federal student loan caps implemented as early as July. Janice Roman, WSHU News.
Connecticut business leaders say they have concerns about affordability. A conversation on that is coming up. The MTA will begin refunding customers impacted by this month's strike on the LIRR. Those who purchased monthly tickets for May will get automatic refunds. The MTA says almost 70,000 riders are eligible. Connecticut has a new state amphibian and state roc. The amphibian, the spring peeper, a frog known for the chirping song that gives it its name. The state roc is Housatonic marble, mined in the Housatonic Valley and used in part to build the state capitol building. Two Long Island airports will get federal funding for upgrades. Elizabeth Field in Southold will get almost $1.7 million to fix up its runways and make safety upgrades. Islip MacArthur will get $350,000 to rehab the airport access roads. Suffolk County Police are rolling out a new device to detect drugs in impaired drivers. It's called Sotoxa, and it uses a saliva swab to test for drugs like cannabis and fentanyl. Police Commissioner Kevin Catalina explains how it works.
If we feel that that person is impaired, we get a positive hit with the Sotoxa device. We're then able to call in a drug recognition expert who makes the final determination on the impairment of that individual, which would then be probable cause for an arrest.
Catalina says the tests help prosecutors build a stronger case in DWI cases. The department has three of the devices in use and is looking to buy more. Despite Connecticut legislators' best efforts in the 2026 legislative session, the state's largest business organization, the CBIA, has been critical of them, saying they have only made the state and doing business in it more unaffordable. WSHU Morning Edition host Brian Scott Smith spoke with Chris Davis, the CBIA's VP of Public Policy, to find out more about their concerns.
Chris, the legislative session for 2026 in Connecticut is now firmly in the rearview mirror. Was it a hit or a miss?
I think it was really a mix of results. In almost every major policy area, we took one step forward and ended up taking three steps back without really addressing some of the major concerns for not only the employer community here in Connecticut, but residents in general dealing with the high cost of healthcare, high cost of energy here in the state.
Healthcare is something which is on everybody's minds, whether they're individuals or businesses, but it's particularly hard for businesses.
Yes, it's very hard for businesses, especially small businesses here in Connecticut. As the session went on, priorities shifted and went away from trying to find ways to make Connecticut more affordable. And in fact, legislation that was coming out of committees was actually looking at ways to raise costs across the board in all of these areas. So the shift from concentration on affordability to then ultimately leading to higher costs at the end of the session was something that I think caught a lot of people by surprise and I know presented a challenge for us here at CBIA. Connecticut has hit an issue regarding small group market, as it's called, for the small employers to be able to offer health insurance for their employees. We at CBIA have been supportive of the idea of an association health plan, which several other states offer. Red and blue states, and they allow for businesses to pool their risk, to come together and say, let's take a series of small businesses, have them all come together and try to purchase insurance together, rather than having them individually purchase on that small group market. So this was the third year that the legislature has looked at this. Usually about a third year, things end up getting passed in Connecticut's legislature. But unfortunately, this year it made it out of the insurance committee, but was stalled in the appropriations committee. And because of that, there was almost no action on lowering costs for employees across the board in any other respect of any other legislation that got passed this year. So it's a real frustrating situation, especially for our small businesses who want to kind of offer this kind of coverage to attract the employees that they need to fill these 85,000 job openings we have across the state, and the inaction of the legislature to approve something that has bipartisan support throughout the process is frustrating and makes it very difficult for small business owners to say, what's going on here? When you have a good policy that's adopted in other states, why can't we do it here at Connecticut?
Of course, for businesses, you know, large and small, I mean, I'm guessing healthcare costs must be so like second only to salary at the end of the day.
Yes, oftentimes it is the number two factor. Labor costs, healthcare costs, and then energy costs are really the top three things for almost all employers, no matter what industry you're in here in Connecticut, given our high costs for both the healthcare and energy here.
Talk to us about energy.
Yeah, well, Connecticut has the second highest energy costs in America, and businesses pay even higher rates than residents do, depending on their types of service. Right now, Connecticut is a high cost state when it comes to electric costs and natural gas costs. So when you have that, in addition to the high cost of healthcare, the labor mandates that are higher here in Connecticut, it really makes it that much more difficult for these businesses to choose to either locate here or expand here when they have options in other states. You couple that with the workforce challenges that Connecticut faces with a declining population, declining labor force participation. There's actually several thousand manufacturing jobs that are unfilled here in Connecticut, not just a job, but a true career where you can have advancement in manufacturing here in Connecticut. One of the very big positive parts of this last legislative session was an expansion of the R&D tax credit, the research and development tax credit, for small businesses, for them to have access to these tax credits as well to make those kinds of investments here in Connecticut.
Now let's talk about housing, because of course there was a controversial housing bill which was signed late 2025.
Yeah, it's one of the top reasons why employers have identified struggles in filling these jobs is just the cost of living here in Connecticut and largely driven by the cost of housing here in our state. And it's an issue that the legislature started to address last session with that major reform package that, yes, it did get vetoed initially. It came back to the table, got the towns and the councils of governments on board to move forward. But Connecticut, if we want to grow our workforce, which is desperately what we need, we are now below our pre-COVID numbers of participation in our workforce. The only way that we can continue to grow that workforce is to have opportunities, areas for them to live. A perfect example of this is Electric Boat down in southeastern Connecticut, hiring about 5,000 individuals a year, but the population isn't there and the housing is certainly not there in order to attract population to move there. So they've really been struggling and filling those positions, not because of a want of trying and a want of training programs, but simply because there's not enough people in that region of the state to attract that, because there isn't a lot of housing there. So now they've had to start recruiting from Haven, from Hartford, from other areas, and trying to figure out a way to get them down to the shipyards down in southeastern Connecticut. So what that housing bill did was provide additional funding for infrastructure improvements targeted towards areas where there is a lack of infrastructure, like sewer, water, natural gas lines, things like that, that are required to have multifamily housing. So now those municipalities can get those grants to be able to make those kinds of improvements and be able to increase the housing stock in areas where there's high demand, like in southeastern Connecticut.
Let's also talk about childcare as well. It's another big thing that CBIA has championed over the last several years as well.
One of the ways that the state has tackled that was last year with a tri-share model that CBIA championed, where it's split up, the costs are split up a third, the employer pays a third, the individual family pays a third, and then the state picks up a third of the cost.
A couple of years ago, we would constantly hear the words fiscal guardrails. We don't seem to have heard those words quite so much this time around. They're still in force, I guess.
It's unquestionable that the last several years of budget surpluses and fiscal stability here in Connecticut are directly the results of the fiscal guardrails that were put in place back in 2017. Without such, we would be facing massive multi-billion dollar deficits, like many of our sister states are across this country right now, when revenue started dipping. But what we have seen in the last two sessions, and especially this session, were significant changes to the guardrails that lead us at CBIA and other groups to start questioning about, are we looking at potential fiscal issues in the very short term in the next couple of years?
Chris Davis, Vice President of Public Policy of the CBIA, thank you ever so much for sharing your thoughts and comments on the legislative session that we've just seen and obviously the look ahead as well.
Thanks so much, Brian. Really appreciate it.
For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio, online at WSHU.org or with our free app. And give us a follow on Instagram for more on the music you hear, the latest news, and some behind the scenes. You can find us at WSHU Public Radio. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll speak tomorrow.